Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. The most important criminal justice race in this recent election was the race for District Attorney of Los Angeles County, the nation's largest local prosecutorial district. Black Lives Matter Los Angeles helped defeat incumbent Jackie Lacey and elect progressive Latino candidate George Gascon. My guest is one of the lead organizers for Black Lives Matter LA, Paula Miner. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Pleased to talk with you.
Congratulations on the election.
Thank you. It was a victory, definitely a victory.
Paula, talk a bit about your work with Black Lives Matter Los Angeles.
Well, you know, as an organizer, I guess I could focus specifically on our work removing the DA, Jackie Lacey, because this started some years ago. Black Lives Matter, as many people may know, was created 7 years ago. So we've been doing organizing. We've been specifically focusing on officer-involved shootings that disproportionately murdered Black men. So that was the impetus back 7 years ago that we started with. And that was the focus of our chapter in Los Angeles. So as we were trying to figure out how to advocate, how to investigate, how to, you know, come up with information about this problem, we would go to the Los Angeles Police Commission and sit and hear the discussion when the shootings occurred and how they made their decisions. So in any case, we determined that the person responsible for accountability should be the district attorney. The district attorney should charge and prosecute those officers who murdered people, and especially with those particular murders where the individual was unarmed or the individual was having a mental crisis, or most of the shootings that we were looking at that time were very questionable. People were consistently being shot in the back. So we started trying to figure out, how do we address this problem? And that was about 2016. And as we were trying to figure it out, trying to do our research, Jackie Lacey, the district attorney, was running for her second term, and she was running unopposed. And we're like, why is this happening? So we began to gather our own information, and we decided that she will not have another term. Our focus, of course, was on officer-involved shootings, but as we began to work on how to deal with it, we developed coalitions with other organizations, and we found out there were other things that she had either done or failed to do that were harmful to Los Angeles County. Basically, she had really been a disservice to Los Angeles County as our district attorney. One of the things people in our coalition, organizations in our coalition were upset with were the way that she gave out the death penalty, even after the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, when he took office, said that he would stay all death penalty sentences. And, California during his time would not be administering, the death penalty. She continued to give death penalty sentences, and her sentences were overwhelmingly to Black and brown and poor people. I think only one individual was not Black or brown. So in addition to that, she refused when marijuana was legalized in the state of California, she refused to expunge the minor marijuana convictions until about a year later when the state of California forced all jurisdictions to expunge those cases. She also was known in her office and known among many of the employees in her office to foster an atmosphere that resulted in a lot of the female attorneys, female prosecutors who worked in there being victims of sexual harassment. She had not supported criminal justice reform. She was against all the legislation that seemed to be coming up around then that wanted to change some of what was happening in criminal justice. She was very, very, I guess what we would call very old school prosecutor. She had been a prosecutor for over 30 years. her only job out of law school had been directly with the district attorney's office. So she kind of grew up professionally with the district attorney's office starting back, I believe it was in 1987. And she was mentored by our previous DA, who was what we call very strongly a law and order district attorney, which is kind of a code name for cracking down on black and brown and poor people. It was a time period that was very, very I would say very just not fair. You know, everything was intended to be punitive. So she had that atmosphere and she was continuing that attitude. She was continuing to carry it forward. So we decided, we developed a slogan, and our slogan was Jackie Lacey must go. So.
And Paula, we should mention here that Jackie Lacey was the first woman and first African American to serve as Los Angeles District Attorney.
Yes, absolutely. And she worked in that office 30 years. And let me just back up a little bit to give you some statistics. The county of Los Angeles has around 10 million people. It includes 40 cities, not just Los Angeles, but cities like Long Beach, Inglewood, Beverly Hills, Santa Monica, West Covina. So she served a very wide area. LA County is very large. So we realized that we couldn't do it alone, but we would be pushing and pulling and making sure that everybody possible was aware of the harm this woman was doing to our community and disproportionately to the black community. So we had a young woman and a young man who were murdered in the city of Inglewood, which is under her jurisdiction, by police. They were sleeping in their car. It is assumed that they may have been out, passed out, pulled the car to the side and fell asleep, were resting instead of driving on, which made sense. Anyhow, officers claim that they tried to wake them up for 45 minutes, which is, you know, an interesting concept. The result was both of them were shot multiple times through the window of the car, and both of them died. The young woman in the car had a twin sister, and that twin sister came to us and said, what can we do? What, you know, what's the next step? We need to have some justice, and we need some transparency. We need somebody to be held accountable. So we contacted Jackie Lacey and asked her to meet with the family of the young girl. And at that time, she refused because she had had a community meeting, I think it was back in 2016. And at that meeting, there were parents who were grieving over their loved ones who had been murdered. And in their grief, they got very emotional. She said they were shouting at her. And maybe they were, but these are people who were suffering, who were grieving, and who may have had a different style of communication than she wanted them to have. So she said she refused to come to any more meetings where people were going to holler at her or shout at her. So we went back and forth with this issue, will you meet? So finally, with the assistance of the young woman, we developed a petition, an online petition. We were able to get 10,000 signatures of people asking Jackie Lacey, hold officers accountable, meet with the families who have suffered due to these officers' action. And then, of course, when the petition is printed out, it's, you know, like almost a ream of paper. So, you know, being somewhat performative, we took that ream of paper with the 10,000 signatures to our office, and we tried to enter the Hall of Justice, which is where our office is. And the officers called up to our office, and she said, no, they cannot come in. So we said, can someone come downstairs and receive it? So this went back and forth, got, you know, people were trying to push in. It was, you know, a reasonable crowd of people who had all come with the young woman, you know, whose family was being identified as wounded. In any case, finally, Jackie Lacey sent a staff person down. That staff person said, well, we'll take the petition and we'll call you back. So we waited a few days. She finally called back one of the organizers in Black Lives Matter and said, you know, she's got the petition, thank you. And so she said, that's it. She said, we said we call you back, this is the call, and hung up. So we said, okay. We said, I guess we have to change our tactic. we decided we would sit on the plaza until she came out to meet with us, however long it took. So we started sitting on the plaza every Wednesday afternoon. We would do outreach and we got others to come. We got people to bring water. We said our chant, Jackie Lacey must go. We had all kinds of ceremonial activities. Sometimes we had celebrities who would come and perform. We would have music, singing, dancing, whatever. We did that, but in addition to doing that, we decided we would follow Jackie Lacey wherever she was going to speak to the public and remind the public who she was. We asked to be kind of a watchers. If they sighted her, we had an instant response group. One time, a young woman was flying from Los Angeles to Sacramento and thought she recognized her. And she took a picture with her phone and sent it back to Black Lives Matter and said, "Is this her?" And we said, "Yeah, just quietly go back there and ask her, why do you refuse to meet with the families?" We said, "Don't create a disturbance on the plane. Just say, you know, good afternoon, Jackie Lacey." This young woman, when she approached, you know, she's business dressed, Jackie's business dressed, so she looked real acceptable. I guess Jackie Lacey thought it was one of her fans, so the young woman was, "Good afternoon, Jackie Lacey." And Jackie Lacey, "Oh, hello." And she said, "Why do you refuse to meet with the families of the victims who have been murdered by police?" She said, Jackie Lacey was so angry. But this is just an example. Around that time, she began her run for her third term. There were people among her staff who would let us know her schedule. So she was having a party to kick off her campaign for her third run in office. And it was at a private downtown club, members only with, you know, and we saw these limos and whatnot coming up, going in. We were at the entrance. And we, of course, when I say we, it's about 45, 50 people. You know, we were at the entrance and someone, I guess, called her and we found out she decided not to even come to her own kickoff party. So in any case, so that's just what we kind of did, you know, in actions. But I think what we also did is draw attention to the general public about what the DA was doing or what the DA had failed to do. And we found out that most people, unless you were involved in some kind of criminal case, had absolutely no idea what a DA did and how much how much power a DA has in your community. You know, basically we found out and we shared with people, the DA is the gatekeeper to prison. In Los Angeles County, we talked about our excessive incarceration rate and we found out that a significant percentage of individuals in California jails, and some of the California prisons and jails are some of the worst in the nation, were occupied by people from our county, over-occupied. So the DA, you know, is the gatekeeper to the prisons. The DA determines the sentencing. The DA determines how long, determines how harsh. And one of the things that we found out is that she used she recommended the harshest sentences possible. She frequently and excessively recommended that juveniles be tried as adults. You know, she used the gang database, which is called a sentence enhancement, so that if a person is convicted of a particular crime, by using that database, you can enhance the sentence. It'll be harsher. And these were her practices. So, yeah, that's what a DA does. And we were able, I guess, to shine a light on that, to share it with the larger community and more people, people from different coalitions, people from different areas within our county began to follow us and began to realize that this is something that needed to change.
So let's turn now to the new district attorney, George Gascon. Black Lives Matter LA's involvement with his campaign and his policies moving forward.
One of the most interesting things I have to share with you is that we were not involved in his campaign in any way. As an organization, BLM does not endorse political candidates. However, we did go to the various organizations like the Democratic Clubs. We went to a number of them and asked them not to endorse Jackie Lacey. We also went to our UTLA, the teachers union, which has a strong political voice in LA County. We went to one of their meetings and asked them not to endorse Jackie Lacey. But we never directly campaigned for Gascon. Our campaign were against Jackie Lacey. We did have a lot of campaign, anti-Jackie Lacey campaign activities. You know, we had canvassing. We had online information. We had a number of billboards. It was one of the most dramatic things that we did. We had billboards with some pictures of murder victims, and on the side we would say, Jackie Lacey must go. She refuses to prosecute cops who kill citizens. And at that time, we had the names. During the 8 years she was in office, we had the names of over 626 individuals who had been killed by the various police departments. Remember, we have the LAPD, we have the LA Sheriff. Most of our little cities have their own police departments. So it's a large number of people that she had jurisdiction on. No one had been prosecuted. One officer was charged and never prosecuted. And because Black Lives Matter, we're just a group of volunteers. We're not organized as a 501c3, you know, which is a charitable group. We're just a group of people doing the work. But we were able to partner with political action committees, PACs, who paid for some of the advertising, paid for the billboards, because by California campaign laws, we could not make those monetary donations. So the PACs made them for us. One PAC was called Real Justice, and they're an organization that does this work all over the nation, you know, trying to move the DA position to become more and more progressive, I would say. And the other one was called White People for Black Lives. They're a political action committee, and they were able to pay for some of the campaign material. But we never campaigned for him. One of the most interesting things is he recognizes that he would not have been able to come from San Francisco to Los Angeles County if we had not shone a light on what was happening and we had not decided that Jackie Lacey should go. To let people know how much he recognized how important our efforts were, after he was declared DA-elect, after Jackie Lacey gave her concession speech, his first public meeting was with Black Lives Matter LA, and we had about 20 families. We met in the basement of a church in Los Angeles. He came, and he allowed those 20 families to talk about each of their cases. And of course, some of those cases were very emotional. They talked about what had happened to their loved one. They talked about, you know, the various difficulties they have with transparency, accountability. We appreciate the fact that his first meeting was with us. And we know that that's a very critical step for him, because we can be assured that the various law enforcement agencies do not like the fact that his first public meeting was with Black Lives Matter. But he's made a commitment. He has already made a commitment. Even before he won, he prepared an open letter to the community. It was published in the LA Times that he would reopen four cases that Jackie Lacey had signed off on. So he named the four individuals. He's going to open their murder cases, and he has four others that he is reviewing to find out, you know, the legality of what happened. In the meeting, he himself said he would continue to have meetings, community meetings with Black Lives Matter, LA, and whoever else we want to bring to those meetings, including the families, including other organizations who might want to talk about other elements of the DA's office, not just, you know, officer-involved shootings. Because as I said, there are a lot of things that you know, people are concerned about, like, death sentences, like juvenile incarceration. There's so many things. We're right now, LA's going through the process of really questioning pretextual stops, where law enforcement stop, you know, basically stop and frisk. But in LA, you know, stop and frisk is by car, so it's pretextual stops. And the harm that they do to members of our community, the Black, brown, and poor community. He has said that he wants to stop pretextual stops. I don't know if he'll be able to do that. He said also that if someone is stopped and has not consented to a search and they bring evidence, police try to include evidence from that search, he will not accept that evidence. The person had not agreed to the search. Whatever he said, we're going to hold him accountable. We're going to have opportunities to meet with him. So, yeah.
And Paula, what is George Gascón, the new DA's, track record or policy toward actually prosecuting police?
This kind of remains to be seen, because he did not prosecute any police while he was the DA in San Francisco. And San Francisco did not have as many officer-involved shootings as LA County did. So we have to wait and see, because he's not prosecuted an officer. He is committed to, you know, he claims he's going to reopen the cases of officer-involved shootings that she closed and said they were justifiable. So we will see. We will hold him accountable. But that was a commitment he made before we even demanded it. And then one thing I did want to say is that he's from Los Angeles. I don't know if you're aware of that. His family came over from Cuba. They came to Los Angeles. So he went to school. And interestingly enough, he joined the LAPD. He was an officer with LAPD. And he rose up to the ranks, I think, of an assistant chief. And then he left Los Angeles and became a chief in some city in Arizona. I forgot where it was. And then he went to San Francisco as a police officer. He might have been chief, I'm not sure. But then he was asked to become the DA when Kamala Harris left the office and, you know, became the state attorney general and ultimately became the senator and now vice president-elect.
So what other ways will Black Lives Matter LA hold the new district attorney accountable? And what are George Gascón's plans for transparency of the DA's office?
He has made promises. He says that he's going to consider, now he hasn't said that he'll do it, but he'll consider having an independent body to investigate officer-involved shootings, you know, to put in a level to where police do the preliminary investigation, and then it goes to the DA's office, and they do a district attorney-level investigation. So he said he was going to try to have an independent group that's neither DA or police do some investigating. So we'll follow up with it. We can say if he's willing to meet with us, he implied maybe quarterly, then we can say what's been done this quarter. Of those four cases that you are going to reopen, how many of them are reopened? What is the information? Can you report anything to these families? What is the progress on creating an independent body to investigate officer-involved shootings? What is the progress on changing some of the sentencing tactics or sentencing recommendations that your office is going to make? One of the things we're going to measure him about is juvenile prosecution, juvenile incarceration. One of the factors in his experience in San Francisco that we can look at that he actually done is reduce, almost eliminate the number of juveniles that are incarcerated. He's tried to do alternative rehabilitation sentences, which we agree in most cases, juveniles should be allowed to at least, you know, have an alternative sentence, be able to be rehabilitated. Because if we're talking about people, you know, between 12, 18 or 12 to 20, we understand there is time to help them change the direction of their lives instead of putting them behind bars. So he had a record in San Francisco of significantly reducing juvenile incarceration. So yes, we look forward to that, and we will expect that to happen in LA County. So I do think that we'll have a way at least to question him. How transparent he is will certainly depend on him, because he is a DA, you know. We understand that he may not be the best thing in the world, you know, because he has a certain kind of job that, you know, that has to be done. So we don't expect everything, but we do expect something, and we do expect significant change.
Paula, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much. Congratulations again to Black Lives Matter Los Angeles. Congratulations to Los Angeles County. All the best to you. We hope this is a wave that will resonate across the nation. We have a few progressive DAs, Philadelphia, and our own Multnomah County here that includes Portland, Oregon.
But this is an amazing, amazing criminal justice reform. It is just amazing. And like you say, I believe that it will impact the entire nation. It's time to change our old way of looking at how we handle criminal justice.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Again, I want to thank my guest, Paula Miner, with Black Lives Matter Los Angeles. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/Prison Pipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineers, and thank you for listening.